Welcome to the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin. Joining me is Dr. Hussein Ibish, a senior resident scholar at the Arab Gulf States Institute in Washington. Secretary of State Pompeo embarked on a trip portrayed at least partly as an effort to convince area states to follow the example of the UAE and agree to normalization with Israel. He was rebuffed in Sudan, where ties have been seen as warming, while the King and Crown Prince of Bahrain, also seen as friendly, preferred to change the subject, at least in public. Is Pompeo failing, or are things going on behind the scenes?
Things are definitely happening behind the scenes. I think it's not surprising that Pompeo was rebuffed in Sudan. Sudan is going through a large transition, and it's really asking a lot for the Sudanese to take this step at this time. I think more likely candidates are Bahrain and Oman. Oman is a bit tricky because Sultan Haitham has just recently come to power following the death of Sultan Qaboos. So for them also, it's something they're ready to do, but it's just come at a very awkward moment for Oman. So it's probable that Bahrain would want to go second. Bahrain is very well positioned to do this, and especially if they don't receive any objections from Saudi Arabia, I think you really might see Bahrain going forward within the year, possibly even sooner than that. A lot of it does depend on the Saudi attitude.
Pompeo's itinerary does not include Riyadh, where the Saudi foreign minister recently said there would be no peace with Israel until the Palestinian issue is settled. Was that just lip service, or was the foreign minister absolutely serious?
Saudi Arabia is unlikely to take such a step under King Salman. They were the authors of the 2002 Arab Peace Initiative, which the UAE's unilateral separate peace with Israel kind of shatters. And the whole linchpin of the API was to link normalization between Israel and Arab and then ultimately Muslim states, because it was also adopted not only by the Arab League, but the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, with a two-state peace agreement between Israel and the Palestinians and an end to the occupation that began in 1967 with agreed upon land swaps. And the UAE has gone ahead on the grounds of no annexation. So in other words, not undoing anything connected to the 1967 war and the occupation, but simply preventing another step in the, you know, away from a two-state solution. So it's really quite a blow to the API, as well as kind of throwing a weird lifeline to a two-state solution as well. It's kind of hard to tell how that's going to play out. But I think Saudi Arabia under King Salman is too committed to the API and too committed to the Palestinian cause to do this. In addition, even his successor, whether it's Mohammed bin Salman or anybody else, I don't doubt that it will be Mohammed bin Salman, they would have a very much more complicated set of strategic, diplomatic, and political calculations than any of these smaller states like UAE, Oman, Bahrain, etc., and more far-flung states like Sudan or Morocco. They would really be risking a lot in terms of their strategic position, their regional Arab standing, their global Islamic standing, domestic political exposure. They really have politics in Saudi Arabia, no matter how repressive it is, simply because they have 30 million people. And it's a much more complicated calculation. So the cost-benefit equation is going to be much more complex from a Saudi point of view, no matter when and how they do this. And I think all of that means it's not going to happen for a while. And I would definitely take Saudi statements that they're not prepared to go forward at this time and remain committed to the API and the Palestinian cause seriously insofar as Saudi policy goes. I do think they're ambivalent, though. I think they see the strategic benefit. I don't think they see the same set of urgent imperatives the UAE did. They're not as worried about Turkey as the UAE and Israel are. They don't have the same high-tech push that the UAE and Israel do. And there are several other considerations, plus all the difficulties I mentioned before. So I would take this seriously, yes.
You are listening to Dr. Hussein Ibish, a senior resident scholar at the Arab Gulf States Institute in Washington. Dr. Ibish, in the UAE, officials seem to be nonplussed with some of the angry comments coming from Israel about the sale to Abu Dhabi of F-35 stealth fighters. Do you see this as a potential deal breaker?
I think the F-35 sale is crucial, and I do think it's, if not a deal breaker, at least a deal spoiler in a way. I am sure that the UAE and the United States walked away from these conversations absolutely convinced that Israel was not going to make any strong public objection. And I'm sure that Prime Minister Netanyahu gave them that impression. But I'm not sure they fully realized who they were dealing with. He has a strong track record of giving one impression and then giving another impression. And when he got back to Israel and this F-35 deal became known, he suddenly started saying he didn't agree with it and he didn't take his position. It was obviously designed to protect himself politically from criticism. So this is actually standard Netanyahu, honestly. I mean, I'm not a great expert in Israeli politics, but I watch it enough to know that's how he rolls. So my sense is that even under a Biden administration, Abu Dhabi is likely to get the F-35s and also the drones they want. And one way it could be managed is for Israel's qualitative military edge to be maintained through sales of even more advanced equipment, which has been denied to Israel, like the F-22 Raptor fighter jets, which the U.S. has sold to nobody, and the so-called mother of all bombs, this gigantic conventional explosive, and things like that. Perhaps some other equipment not yet really well known publicly. There's another fifth generation fighter being developed, things like that. So, it is not at all impossible to square the Abu Dhabi getting the F-35s with Israel's qualitative military edge being maintained. In addition, it's sort of hard to see why Israel would be nervous about the UAE possessing these planes, given how close they're becoming. So, my sense is the United States is going to go forward with this in the end, and that there will be a way around this under either a second Trump or a Biden administration. In the end, it's up to the United States. The QME legislation does not give Israel a veto, as Israel discovered when it came to the AWACS sales under President Reagan. And, that could be one other way of doing it. It's simply for the United States to go forward over Israeli objections. And it may come to that as well. My sense is, and it will probably happen, and it will be mutually agreed on in the end.
Dr. Hussein Ibish, thank you for joining me at the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin.